Sabbath afternoon or morning or whatever it happens to be when you're watching this. Hopefully everyone's doing well. I know there's something going around. Week before last, I had the flu for a whole week, and it's been a while since I've been that sick. Thankfully, I'm doing a lot better, but you see me eating some candy, that's probably why. Which I found out historically, candy was actually a medicine before. You know, candy and ginger snaps started out as medicinal, so it's not candy anymore, it's my medicine. Anyways, if you will turn with me to Exodus chapter 32 for a title today, and I'm not terribly good at titles, so it might not completely fit, but I've got a holy high priest and a righteous king. And the point I'm going to try to show is, without going too much, is there's no person that's quite fit for service as a perfect high priest, and there's no person that's quite fit for service as a perfect king, except for one. We do have Christ, which we'll see here at the end. But Exodus chapter 32, and I'll be reading mostly from the Scriptures translation from 2009. However, one caveat to that is they've got a lot of the names kind of done out in Hebrew, and I'll change it, you know. So instead of saying Shlomo, I'll say Solomon, just so people know what I'm talking about. And then I'll let you know if I change translations. But for Old Testament, that's one that I personally prefer. Exodus 32, verse 1 says, "And when the people saw that Moses was long in coming down from the mountain, the people all gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Arise and make us mighty ones who go before us. For this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.'" And if you look a little further, you'll see that Aaron said, "No, no, no, we can't do that." You know, that's not at all what he said. And Aaron said to him, "Take off the golden earrings which are on the ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me." And all the people took off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he took this from their hand, and he formed it with an engraving tool, and he made a molded calf and said, "This is your mighty one, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." And Aaron saw and built a slaughter place or an altar before it. And Aaron called out and said, "Tomorrow is a festival to Jehovah, to the Eternal." And they rose early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose to play. And this playing, they weren't playing hopscotch. Without being too graphic, they were being quite raucous, something that you wouldn't expect to see at Mardi Gras. And Jehovah said to Moses, "Get down, go, for your people whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them, and they have made themselves a molded calf, and have bowed themselves to it and slaughtered to it, and have said, 'This is your mighty one, O Israel, which brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" Now, the sheer audacity of this act is hard for me to even wrap my mind around. This is after, just weeks after, they'd heard the voice of God literally proclaiming the Ten Commandments. And if you look at verse 15 of chapter 32, "And Moses turned and went down the mountain, and in his hand were two tablets of the witness, tablets written on both sides, written one and on the other. And the tablets were the work of Elohim," or the work of the mighty ones. "And the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. And Joshua heard the noise of the people and shouted, and he said to Moses, 'A noise of battle in the camp.' But he said, 'It is not the sound of those who shout of might, nor is it the sound of those who cry out in weakness, but it is the singing that I hear.' And it came to be, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. Moses' displeasure burned, and he threw the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. Then they took the calf which they had made and burned it with fire and ground it into powder and scattered it on the face of the water and made the children of Israel to drink it. And Moses said to Aaron, 'What did this people do to you that you brought such a great sin upon them? And Aaron said, "Do not let the displeasure of my master burn. You know the people, that it is evil." And they said to me, "Make us mighty ones who go before us. For this Moses, a man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what's become of him." And I said to them, "Whoever has gold, let him take it off." And they gave it to me. And I threw it in the fire, and this calf just came out. You know, that's a little bit different story than we heard earlier, where he took engraving tools and fashioned it and engraved it and molded it. This calf just came out. And Moses saw the people were let loose, for Aaron had let them loose to their shame among their enemies. And you see, I'm not going to harbor too much on the high priests, but this here is an example of the pinnacle of the high priest, which every high priest descended from. You know, and there were different levels of good and bad within the high priesthood, but none of them were faithful to God as faithful as our high priest, Jesus Christ. Now, for the rest of the sermon, I'm going to focus more on the kings, just because there's a whole lot more about them. You know, we could talk about Eli, and we could talk about Abimelech and different priests that were around, but focus more on kings here. We'll go back to Deuteronomy chapter 17. We're going to see kind of the ground rules that God had laid for the kings, because long before Israel had a king, God knew, as he says, the end from the beginning and what would be. Deuteronomy chapter 17, and beginning in verse 14, we see, it says here, "When you come into the land which the Eternal, your God, is giving you, and shall possess it, and shall dwell in it, and you shall say, 'Let me have a sovereign or a king over me, like all the nations around me,' you shall certainly set a sovereign over you, whom Jehovah, your Elohim, shall choose. Set a sovereign over from among your brothers. You are not allowed to set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Only he is not to increase horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to increase horses. For Jehovah has said to you, 'Do not return to that way again.' And he is not to increase wives for himself, lest he turn away, nor is he greatly to increase silver and gold for himself. And it shall be, when he sits upon the throne of his kingdom or of his reign, he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book. For from the one before the priests, the Levites, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, so that he learns to fear Jehovah, his Elohim, and to guard all the words of this Torah and these laws, to do them, so that his heart is not lifted up above his brothers, so that he does not turn aside from the command, either to the right or to the left, so that he prolongs the days of his reign, he and his children, in the midst of Israel." And if you will, turn forward to Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 10. And as we're going there, I'll just say, when I was a kid, one of the first questions that ever came to mind that threw me into a worry that maybe the Bible wasn't true was, you know, Samuel dies in the first book of Samuel. Well, who wrote the second book of Samuel? And thankfully, I found that answer eventually. And what it was is they were all considered to be the books of the kings. You know, first books of the kings, second, third, fourth. And it wasn't Samuel at all who named it. And I don't think he would have named it after himself either. But that's a modern thing when we split the Bible up. So don't worry, when Samuel's death does come, it's not a misprint. But anyways, 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 17. "And Samuel called the people together to Jehovah at Mizpah and said to the children of Israel, 'Thus says Jehovah, the Elohim of Israel, I brought Israel up out of Egypt and delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of all the kingdoms of those who oppressed you. And today you have rejected your Elohim, who has saved you out of all your evils and your distresses. And you have said to him, "No, but set a sovereign or king over us." And now present yourselves before Jehovah by your tribes and by your clans." Dropping down to verse 21. "Then he brought near the tribe of Benjamin by their clans. The clan of Matri was taken. And Saul, son of Kish, was taken. And then they sought him, and he could not be found. And they asked again of Jehovah, "Has the man come yet?" And Jehovah answered and said, "See, he is hidden by that baggage." And they ran and brought him there. And he stood in the midst of the people. And he is taller than any of the people from the from shoulders upwards. And Saul, regardless of his imposing size, you see, was very humble and trying to avoid this, which he knew ahead of time that he was going to be chosen because he'd already been told by Samuel before when he went to find the donkey. And Samuel tells him, said to all the people, "Do you see him whom Jehovah, whom the Eternal has chosen, that there is no one like him among all the people?" And the people shouted and said, "Let the sovereign live." Or as we hear today, you know, "Long live the king." And Samuel declared to the people the rulings of the reign, or the rules of the kingdom, and wrote them in a book and placed them before Jehovah. And Samuel sent all the people away, each to his house. And for the specifics of that, I think is more Samuel's explaining to him what kind of powers this king would have. And if you turn back with me to 1 Samuel chapter 8, we'll see some of those listed off here. And while there's a vast number of powers that are here, you'll notice that there's quite a few things that kings of Israel would do later on that aren't listed here. They overstep their authority, which happens often with men, you know, with governments in general. It's, you never see them legislate to remove power from their hands. It's always to expand and increase. 1 Samuel 8 and verse 4. "And all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, 'Look, you are old, and your sons do not walk after your ways. Now appoint for us a sovereign to rule us like all the nations.' But the word was evil in the eyes of Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to rule over us.' So Samuel prayed to the Eternal, and Jehovah said to Samuel, 'Listen to the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from reigning over them. According to all the works which they have done since the day I brought them out of Egypt, even unto this day, forsaking me and serving other mighty ones, so they are doing to you too. Now listen to their voice, but you shall certainly warn them and shall make known to them the ruling of the sovereign who does reign over them.' And Samuel spoke all the words of Jehovah to the people who asked him for a sovereign and said to him, 'This is the ruling of the sovereign, or of the king who does reign over you. He shall take your sons and appoint them for his own chariots and to be his horsemen, and they shall run before his chariots, and shall appoint commanders to his thousands and commanders over his fifties to plow his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his weapons and to equipment for his chariots. And your daughters he is going to make perfumers and cooks and bakers. And the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive trees he is going to take and give them to his servants. And your male servants and your female servants and your best young men and your donkeys he is going to take and use for his own work. A tenth of the sheep he is going to take. And you are to be his servants. And you shall cry out, not you may, but you shall cry out in that day because of the sovereign whom you have chosen for yourself. But Jehovah is not going to answer you in that day.' However, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel and said, 'No, but let a sovereign be over us. Then we shall be, we also, like all the nations, and our sovereign shall rule us and go out before us and fight our battles.' And Samuel heard all the words of the people and repeated them in the hearing of Jehovah. And Jehovah said to Samuel, 'Listen to their voice and make them a sovereign.'" Now again, the people clearly weren't listening. "He shall go out and fight before us, before all of our battles," even though Samuel just got done telling him, "No, your sons are going to run before his chariots into battle." And that's to spot and make sure the ground's good and easy, but it's also a human shield, you know, say it lightly, that's where all the casualties would be, is right before the king, because all nations knew back then is if you get to that king, well, then you win the game. Turning to 1 Samuel chapter 12, we continue in this story, verses 1 Samuel chapter 12. And Samuel said to all of Israel, "Look, I have listened to your voice that you said to me, and have set a sovereign over you. And now look, the sovereign is walking before you. I am old and gray, and look, my sons are with you. And I have walked before you from my youth to this day. Look, here I am, witness against me before Jehovah and before his anointed. Whose ox have I taken, and whose donkey have I taken? Of whom have I oppressed? Whom have I abused? From whose hand have I received a bribe with which to blind my eyes? Then I will restore it to you." And they said, "You have not oppressed or abused us, nor have you taken any bribe from anyone's hands." And he said to them, "The Eternal is witness against you, and is anointed as witness today, that you have found not in my hand." And they answered, "He is witness." And Samuel said to the people, "It is Jehovah who appointed Moses and Aaron, and who brought your fathers out of the land of Egypt. And now stand still, so that I may judge you before Jehovah concerning all the righteous acts of Jehovah, which you have done to you and to your fathers. When Jacob came out of Egypt, you and your fathers cried out and sent them. Then Jehovah sent Moses and Aaron, who brought you, brought your fathers out of Egypt and made them to dwell in the place. But they forgot Elohim, so he sold them into the hand of Sisera, the commander of the army of Hazor, and into the hand of the Philistines, and into the hand of the sovereign of Moab. And they fought against them. And they cried out to Jehovah and said, 'We have sinned because we have forsaken Jehovah and served Baals and Ashtaroth. And now deliver us from the hand of our enemies, and we shall serve you.' And Jehovah sent Jerubbaal," or Gideon, "and Bedan and Yizpah and Samuel, and delivered you out of the hands of your enemies round about, and you dwelt in safety. And when you saw Nahash, sovereign of the children of Ammon, come against you, you said to me, 'No, but let a sovereign reign over us,' where Jehovah, your Elohim, was your sovereign." And as a side note, Nahash was the name of the king of Ammon, which is why they demanded Saul be appointed. Well, that word in Hebrew means serpent, and it's the same exact word. It means serpent or whisperer. It's the same exact word that's used for the serpent in the Garden of Eden. So this would be almost literally like Satan, the king of Ammon, just as a side note. I'm sure he's quite a snaky fella. "And now, here is the sovereign which you have chosen and whom you have asked. And see, Jehovah has set a sovereign over you. If you fear Jehovah and serve him and obey his voice and rebel not against the command of Jehovah, then both you and your sovereign who reigns over you shall follow Jehovah your Elohim. But if you do not obey the voice of Jehovah and shall rebel against the mouth of Jehovah, then the hand of Jehovah shall be against you, as it was against your fathers." In chapter 12, verse 16, of 1 Samuel. "And now, stand and see the great matter which Jehovah does before your eyes. Is today not the wheat harvest?" Which, coincidentally, is going on now. You know, all the way up through to Pentecost is when they'd be harvesting the wheat. "Let me call to Jehovah so that he sends thunder and rain," which also coincidentally is happening today. Nothing to do with me, though. "Know then and see your evil is great, which you have done in the eyes of Jehovah, in asking for yourselves a sovereign. And Samuel called to Jehovah, and Jehovah sent thunder and rain that day. And all the people greatly feared Jehovah and Samuel. And the people said to Samuel, 'Pray for your servants to Jehovah that we do not die.'" So this must have been quite the storm. I don't think his little flash and lightning. "Pray that we do not die, for we have added to our sins this evil of asking for ourselves a king." And Samuel said to the people, "Do not fear. You have done all this evil. Only do not turn aside from following Jehovah. And you shall serve Jehovah with all your heart. And do not turn aside after worthless matters or vain matters which do not profit nor deliver, for they are worthless." And if you will, go to 1 Samuel 15. 1 Samuel chapter 15. We'll begin in verse 1. 1 Samuel 15, verse 1, and Samuel said to Saul, Jehovah has sent me to anoint you, king over his people, over Israel. And now hear the voice of the words of Jehovah. Thus says Jehovah of hosts, I shall punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he set himself against him on the way which he came out of Egypt. Now go, and you shall strike Amalek and put him under the ban, all that he has, or destroy all that he has. And you shall not spare them, and put to death from man to woman, from infant to nursing child, from ox to sheep, from camel to donkey. And Saul summoned the people and mustered them in Telem, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and lay wait in the wadi. You know, wadi is a valley or a canal. It's pretty much used in the Middle East for everything from a ditch on the side of the road to a great canyon. So I'm sure 200,000 foot soldiers, this was one of the bigger ones. And Saul said to the Kenites, who were descendants of Moses, his father-in-law, go, turn aside, come down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you did show loving commitment or faithfulness to the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites turned aside from the midst of the Amalekites. And Saul struck the Amalekites from Hawala to Shur, which is before Egypt. And he caught Agag, which was sovereign of the Amalekites, alive, and put under the ban, or put to death, all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep, and the cattle, and the fatlings, and the lambs, and all that was good, and did not put them under the ban or destroy them. But all that was goods that were despised and worthless, those they destroyed. You know, kind of reminiscent of when they went to Jericho and you had some people that tried sneaking the good stuff into their tent. God doesn't take kindly to that. And the word of Jehovah came to Samuel, saying, I am grieved that I have set up Saul as a sovereign, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my words. And it displeased Samuel, and he cried all night. You see, this really bothered Samuel greatly, you know. It made him mourn and cry all night. And Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul. And it was told to Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel, and see, he set up this monument for himself, and then turned, passed down, went over, and went down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul and said to him, Saul said to him, blessed are you of Jehovah. I have performed the words of Jehovah. And mind you, Saul had time to go all the way up to Carmel, which is in the northern part of Israel. Well, later on, that's where Elijah had the prophets of Baal slaughtered. And then he turned and went back down to Gilgal, which is where they first came into the promised land there by Jericho. And he says, I have performed all the word of Jehovah. I'm done. Mission accomplished. But Samuel said, what then is the bleating of sheep in my ears and the lowing of cattle which I heard? And then Saul said, they have brought them from Amalek because the people spared the best of the sheep and the cattle to slaughter to Jehovah, your Elohim. And the rest we have put under the ban or put to death. And Samuel said to Saul, wait, and let me declare to you what Jehovah said to me last night. And he said to him, speak. And Samuel said, though you were little in your eyes, and you were not the head of the tribes of Israel, and did not Jehovah anoint you sovereign over Israel? And Jehovah sent you on the way and said, go, and you shall put under the ban all the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. And why did you not obey the voice of Jehovah, but swooped down on the spoil and did evil in the eyes of Jehovah? Now, when I was a kid, this used to confuse me because I thought, well, you know, he only spared Agag. But if you keep reading the Bible, you'll see that that's not the only Amalekite. In fact, the Amalekites would continue on to wreak and cause trouble for the Israelites for many years. You know, it's an Amalekite descendant of Agag that came out of Egypt after Solomon. is an Amalekite who brought word to David of Saul's death. One of Saul's own servants was one of these Amalekites. And it was an Amalekite who tried putting to death all the Israelites in the book of Esther. So again, we might not understand when God's judgments seem harsh, but know that they are always righteous. And you don't need to understand to obey. Going on. And why did you not obey the voice of Jehovah, but swoop down on the spoil and did evil in the eyes of Jehovah? And Saul said to Samuel, I did obey the voice of Jehovah, and I went on the way which Jehovah sent me and brought back Agag, sovereign of Amalek, and I put Amalek under the ban, or I destroyed Amalek. But see, the people took of the spoil, and of the sheep, and of the cattle, the best of which should have been put to death to slaughter to Jehovah, your Elohim, in Gilgal. And Samuel said, does Jehovah delight in burnt offerings and slaughterings, as in the obeying of the voice of Jehovah? Look, to obey is better than slaughtering, to heed better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as a sin of divination, and stubbornness is as wickedness of idolatry. But you have rejected the word of Jehovah. He also does reject you as sovereign. And if you will turn to 1 Samuel chapter 28, this is the verse that threw me into questioning myself as a young man. But again, it's all right to question what you see in the Bible as long as you're looking faithfully for the answer, and there always is an answer. 1 Samuel chapter 28, and beginning in verse 3. And Samuel had died, and all Israel mourned for him and buried him at Ramah in his own city. And Saul had put away all the mediums and the spiritualists from the land. And the Philistines were gathered and came and camped at Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel, and they encamped at Gilboa, which, if you remember, was a homeland of Saul there in Benjamin. And when Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And Saul inquired of Jehovah, but Jehovah did not answer him, either by dreams or by the Urim or by the prophets. And at this point, I'm sure Saul was really regretting that he'd chased his greatest faithful general out of his camp and into the arms of the Philistines. So if you remember, this is long after Goliath had been taken by David, and David by this point truly had slain his 10,000s. Continuing on, Saul said to his servants, find me a woman who is a medium and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, look, there's a woman, rather quickly, didn't take him long to find. Look, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor. And Saul disguised himself and put on other garments and went, he and two men with him. And they came to a woman by night and said, please divine for me and bring up for me one who I shall name. And again, this I don't believe is going to be the actual one he names, but I think this is a lying spirit. Continuing on, though. But the woman said to him, look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the spiritualists from the land. And why then do you lay a snare for my life to put me to death? And Saul swore to her by Jehovah and said, as Jehovah lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this matter. Again, that's far overstepping his bounds. You know, I don't remember that being in the king's powers, which was listed, to not only swear by God, but to overrule God's laws. And the woman said, whom do I bring up for you? And he said, bring up Samuel for me. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, why have you deceived me? You yourself are Saul. And the king said to her, do not be afraid. What do you see? You see, Saul himself couldn't see whatever this was. This is just the woman talking to what I believe was this demon or lying spirit. And the woman said to Saul, I saw a spirit coming out of the earth. And he said to her, what is his form? And she said, an old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul knew that it was Samuel. And he bowed his face to the ground and did obeisance, or bowed his face to the ground and did worship. And again, this is how I know it wasn't Samuel, because Samuel probably would have kicked him at that point. But like my dad used to always say, even if I saw my grandfather appear before the foot of my bed and he knew everything about me, I would still know that's not my grandfather, because the dead know nothing. They're sleeping and at rest. But the fact that humans can do impersonations of other humans in just a short few years, we've got whole genres of comedians that do just that, should tell you that the spirits of this world could probably do a lot better impersonation of us than we would like to even know. Anyways, and Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" And Saul answered and said, "I am deeply distressed, for the Philistines are fighting against me, and Elohim has turned aside from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by the prophets nor by dreams. So I have called you to reveal to me what I should do." And Samuel said, "And why do you ask me, seeing Jehovah has turned aside from you and has become your enemy? And Jehovah has done for himself as he spoke by me, for Jehovah has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David. But you did not obey the voice of Jehovah, nor execute his burning wrath upon Amalek. Therefore, Jehovah has done this matter to you today. Further, Jehovah also gives Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons are with me. Jehovah also gives the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines." And that's the story of the end of Saul's reign over the house of Israel. Him and his sons were destroyed that very next day. And if you will, turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 3. And knowing all this history, you know, time and time again, seeing God before the people of Israel, seeing the interventions of God, you would think, again, that God would surely have reached these people and they'd finally just follow him faithfully, you know. But I'd point out to our own people, America, Britain, England, Canada, and I say Britain and England because, you know, Scotland and Ireland don't like to be called England. And the salvation we saw in World War II, how quickly we forget that, you know, or after 9/11, we all saw the nation supposedly turn to God, and just a few short years later, you know, we have what we have. In 1 Kings chapter 3, beginning in verse 5, we see at Gibeon, Jehovah appeared to Solomon in a dream at night. So Jehovah asked, or Elohim asked, "And what shall I give you?" And Solomon said, this doesn't tell us exactly when, but Solomon became king when he was a young man. Some traditions, if you put any weight, say that he is between 15 and 20 years old. And Solomon said, "You have shown great loving commitment, or great faith, to your servant David, my father, as he walked before you in truth and in righteousness and uprightness of heart with you. And you have guarded him, and you have guarded for him this great loving commitment. And you did give him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Jehovah, my Elohim, you have set up your servant to reign in the stead of my father. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or to come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Shall you then give your servant an understanding heart to rule your people, to discern between good and evil? For who is able to rule this great people of yours?" And the word was good in the eyes of Jehovah that Solomon asked this. So, excuse me. So Elohim said to him, "Because you have asked this and have not asked long life for yourself, nor have you asked riches for yourself, nor have you asked the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself discernment to understand right ruling, see, I shall do according to your words. See, I shall give you a wise and understanding heart, so that there is none like you before you, and none like you shall rise after you. And I shall say, and I shall also give to you what you have not asked, both riches and esteem or glory, so that there shall not be anyone among like you among all the sovereigns all your days. And if, here's a caveat, if you walk in my ways to guard my laws and my commandments, as your father David did, then I shall prolong your days. In 1 Kings chapter 9, beginning in verse 1, 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass, when Solomon had finished building the house of Jehovah and the house of the king, and all the desire of Solomon, which he is pleased to do, that Jehovah appeared to Solomon the second time, as he appeared to him at Gibeon. And Jehovah said to him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication that you have made before me at the dedication of the temple. I have set this house apart from which you have built in my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart shall always be there. And you, if you walk before me as your father David walked," again, God knowing the end from the beginning, I think was really trying to drop some hints here to Solomon. "If you walk before me as your father David walked, in the integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do all that I have commanded you, if you guard my laws and my right rulings, then I shall establish the throne of your reign over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, there is not to cease a man of yours on the throne of Israel. However, if you turn back, you or your sons, from following me, and do not guard my commands, my laws, which I've set before you, but shall go serve other mighty ones and bow yourself before them, then I shall cut off Israel from the face of the soil which I have given them, and send them away from my presence, this house which I have set apart for my name. And Israel shall be a proverb and a mockery among the peoples. And this house which has been exalted, everyone who passes by it shall be astonished and hiss and say, why has Jehovah done this to this land and to this house? And then they shall say, because they have forsaken the Eternal, their Elohim, who brought them out of the land of Egypt, and they took hold of other mighty ones and bowed themselves unto them and served them, this is why Jehovah has brought this evil upon them." And again, what history would have been if Solomon had taken all this to heart. However, if you turn to 1 Kings chapter 11, and I don't know how much later this was, but 1 Kings chapter 11, "And the sovereign, or King Solomon, loved many foreign women, in addition to the daughter of the Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women, from the nations of whom Jehovah had said to the children of Israel, you do not go into them, and they do not go into you, for they shall certainly turn away your hearts after their mighty ones. Solomon clung to these in love, and he clung to 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. And it came to be, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned away his heart after other mighty ones, or other gods. And his heart was not perfect before Jehovah's Elohim, as was the heart of David. And Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the mighty one of the Sidonians, and Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the eyes of Jehovah, and did not follow Jehovah completely, like his father David. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, who coincidentally had a 6 or 8-pointed star representing him, if you've ever seen that. On the hills of the east of Jerusalem, for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon, and he did for all his foreign wives who burned incense and slaughtered, offered offerings to their gods. Therefore, Jehovah was enraged with Solomon, because his heart had turned away from Jehovah, Elohim of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning the word, not to go after other mighty ones. But he did not guard that which Jehovah had commanded. And Jehovah said to Solomon, because you have done this and have not guarded my covenant and my laws, which I commanded you, I certainly tear away the kingdom from you and give it to your servant. Only I do not do it in your days for the sake of David, your father. Out of the hand of your son shall I tear it. Only I shall not tear away all the kingdom, but give one tribe to your son for the sake of David and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. And if you will, look to 1 Kings chapter 11, a little further down at verse 26. We find, and the servant of Solomon, Jeroboam, son of Nebat, an Ephraimite from Zeredah, whose mother's name was Tesaru, a widow who lifted up from against his hand against the sovereign. And this is what caused him to lift up his hand against the king. Solomon built Milo, repairing the breaks of the city of David, his father. Or Milo being a specific city that was there in Israel, but it could also be translated the citadel or the tower. And repairing the breaks of his father, David. Because David had faith in God, and I could be wrong, but I don't believe that David in his lifetime built great walls around Israel to protect him, because God was his rock. God was David's citadel, which he defended or depended on to defend him. Continuing on, and the man Jeroboam was a brave man, and Solomon, seeing that the young man was doing his work well, made him officer over all the compulsory labor of the house of Joseph. And it came to be at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Abiah the Shilonite met him on the way, and he was wearing a new garment, and the two were alone in the field. And Abiah took hold of the new garment that was on him and tore it into 12 pieces and said to Jeroboam, take for yourself 10 pieces, for thus says Jehovah, Elohim of Israel, see, I am tearing the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and shall give 10 tribes to you. But he shall have one tribe for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, a city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel. Because they have forsaken me and bow themselves before Ashtaroth, the mighty one of the Sidonians, to Chemosh, the mighty one of the Moabites, Milcom, the mighty one of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do what is right in my eyes and keep my laws and my right rulings as did his father David. But I do not take all the kingdom out of his hands because I have made him ruler all the days of his life for sake of my servant David, whom I chose because he guarded my commands and my laws. And I shall take the kingdom out of his son's hand and give it to you, 10 tribes. And his son I give one tribe, so that my servant David shall always have a lamp before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen for myself to put my name there. So I take you, and you shall reign over all that your being desires, and you shall be sovereign over Israel. And it shall be, if you obey the commands I command you, and you shall walk in my way to do what is right in my eyes, to guard my laws and my commands as my servant David did, then I shall be with you and build you for you a steadfast house, for as I built for David, and shall give Israel to you. And because of this, I humble the seed of David, but not forever. And Solomon, you know, as we see continued on, sought to kill Jeroboam, but Jeroboam rose up and fled to Egypt. And Shishak, sovereign of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. Now, that's an interesting side note, the Shishak, sovereign of Egypt. There's actually a lot of connections to the common name of Ramesses the Great, the third ruler of Egypt, who had a propensity for striking off other rulers' names and putting his own names there. In fact, there's many times, because they used to have raised relief on Egyptian monuments and stuff, where he just knocked them clean off, and then he inset his name into there and changed the entire style of it, being that you couldn't scratch his name off without destroying the whole monument. This is a Ramses that they try and make portray as the Pharaoh of the Exodus, but he was actually much later, contemporary with Solomon. But that's just a side note. And continuing on, in 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 18, and when King Rehoboam, this is after Rehoboam, Solomon's son, took over, and when King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over all the compulsory labor, all Israel stoned him with stones, and he died. And King Rehoboam hastily mounted his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. And so this is after Rehoboam refused to lighten the load for Israel. He sent the tax man out there. And we all know how much the tax man's loved throughout history. And it didn't end well for him. So Rehoboam had to flee. And in 1 Kings 12, 19, we see that thus the Israel revolted against the house of David, and came to be when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had come back, that they sent for him and called him to the congregation. And they set him up to rule over Israel. There is none who followed the house of David except for the tribe of Judah only. And Rehoboam came to Jerusalem and assembled the house of Israel with the tribe of Benjamin, 180,000 chosen brave men, to fight against the house of Israel and bring them back to the reign or under the authority of Rehoboam, son of Solomon. But the word of Elohim came to Shemaiah, the man of Elohim, saying, "Speak to Rehoboam, son of Solomon, king of Judah, and to all the house of Judah and Benjamin, and all the rest of the people. Thus says Jehovah, do not go up or fight against your brothers, the children of Israel. Let every man return to his house. This matter is from me." So they obeyed the word of Jehovah and turned back according to the word of Jehovah. Now, it seems that Solomon might have forgotten to tell Rehoboam what was going to happen. This is something God doesn't do to surprise us. He tells us always what's going to be in the end from the beginning so we can be prepared. Continuing on, Jeroboam, built Shechem in the mountains of Ephraim and dwelt there. And he went out from there and built Peniel. Peniel being the site that Jacob had named Face of God, because that's where he wrestled with God. And Jeroboam said in his heart, "Now the kingdom shall return to the house of David. If these people go do the slaughterings in the house of Jehovah at Jerusalem, then the heart of the people shall turn back to their master, Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go back to Rehoboam, sovereign of Judah." Now again, especially since God chooses to work with the lowly, sometimes we can get a sense of imposter syndrome where we feel we don't belong here. Just have faith in God. You know, if your faith is in God, he can use the least for the most, and he can bring the highest to the lowest point. Unfortunately, Jeroboam didn't think that way. And it says, "So Jeroboam took counsel and made two calves of gold and said to the people, 'It is too much for you to go to Jerusalem. See, your mighty ones, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt.' And he set one up in Bethel, the house of God, where Jacob had seen the visions of the angels ascending and descending. And he set one up in Dan." And this matter became a sin, for the people went before the one as far as Dan, which was in the northernmost part in a town that was called Lachish before. And he made the house of the high places and made priests from all sorts of people who were not the sons of Levi. And Jeroboam performed a festival on the 15th day of the 8th new moon, like the festival that was in Judah, and he offered on the slaughtering place. So he did in Bethel, slaughtering the calves he had made. And at Bethel, he appointed priests of the high places which he had made. And he made offerings on the slaughtering place which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th new moon, in the new moon which he had devised in his own heart. And he performed a festival to the children of Israel and offered on the slaughtering place and burned incense. And if you will turn to 2 Kings, we see later here what would happen here. And there's more to this story, but 2 Kings, we come to the story of Elisha in chapter 9, verse 1. Elisha the prophet called one of the sons of the prophets and said to him, "Gird your loins and take the flask of oil in your hand and go to Ramoth Gilead, and there you shall look for one named Jehu, son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi, and go and make him rise up from among his brothers and take him into the inner room and take this flask of oil, pour it on his head and say, 'Thus says Jehovah, I have anointed you sovereign over Israel, and you shall open the door and flee and do not wait.'" And the time period for this is during the king of the reign of Jezebel, with her son sitting as king. Ahab has already died at this point. Elijah had already been taken up in the chariots. If you fall down to verse 21, because as soon as this guy anointed him, ran off, you know, Jehu's standing there thinking, "What kind of a nut is this?" And the people asked him, "Well, what happened?" And he said, "That guy just anointed me king of Israel." And all the officers around there bowed down and said, "Long live the king." So, in verse 21, then Jeroboam said, "Hitch up." And his chariot was hitched up. And Jehoram, rather, sovereign of Israel, and Ahaziahu, sovereign of Judah, went out, each in his chariot. And they went to meet Jehu and met him on the portion of land that belonged to Naboth the Jezreelite. This being the beautiful garden which Jezebel told Ahab, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." And they falsely accused him and had him put to death so they could confiscate his lands on the word of two false witnesses. And it came to be when Jehoram saw Jehu, who was one of his commanders, he said, "Is there peace, Jehu?" But he answered, "What peace, as long as the whorings of your mother Jezebel and her witchcraft are so many?" Then Jehoram turned his hands around and fled and said to Ahaziahu, "Treachery, Ahaziahu." And Jehu drew back his bow and struck Jehoram between the arms and between his shoulders. And the arrow came out at his heart, and he sank down in his chariot. And Jehu said to Bidkar, his officer, because oftentimes he would have somebody else driving the chariot so the king could do his important things. You know, they couldn't text and drive back then either. And he said to him, "Take him up and throw him on the portion of the field for Naboth the Israelite. Remember how you and I were riding together behind Ahab his father, and Jehovah lifted up this pronouncement against him. Have I not seen the blood of Naboth and the blood of his sons last night, declares Jehovah? And shall I repay you this portion, declares Jehovah? And now take him, throw him on the portion according to the word of Jehovah." And Ahaziah, sovereign of Judah, saw this and fled by way of Beth Hagan. And Jehu pursued him and said, "Strike him too in the chariot at the ascent to Gur, which is by Yibleam." And he fled to Megiddo and died there. Then his servants conveyed him in the chariot to Jerusalem and buried him in the burial place with his fathers in the city of David. And if you will turn, look down to chapter 9, verse 30 of 2 Kings. Jehu, again, fulfilling the word of God, Jehu came to Yezreel, and Jezebel heard of it, and she put paint on her eyes and adorned her head and looked through the window. She got herself all made up. As Jehu came to the gate, she said, "Is it peace, Zimri, killer of your master?" And this is a callback to the house of Jeroboam, who set up the calves. His sons, I believe, in the fourth generation were killed by Zimri, who was then killed by an officer named Omri, who was the founder of the house of Ahab. So she's kind of calling back to history a little bit and alluding to Jehu being wicked like Zimri was. However, this is God's judgment, not Jehu's own doing. And he lifted up his face to the window, not even acknowledging her, and said, "Who is with me? Who?" And two eunuchs looked down at him, and he said, "Throw her down." And they threw her down, and some of her blood spattered on the wall and on the horses, and he trampled her underfoot. And when he went in, he ate and he drank, and, you know, it's probably calmed down a little bit, as sometimes we can get in the heat of battle. He said, "Go now and see to this cursed one and bury her, for she is a sovereign's daughter. She's the daughter of the king of Sidon." And they went to bury her, but all they found was her skull and her feet and the palms of her hands. They came back to him, and he said, "Thus is the word of Jehovah, which he spoke by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, in this portion of Jezreel, the dogs are going to eat the flesh of Jezebel, and the corpse of Jezebel shall be as dung on the surface of the field in the portion of Jezreel, so that they do not say, this is Jezebel." And again, very serious pronouncement that God made and saw fulfilled in his own time. And Jehu gathered, 2 Kings, chapter 10, verse 18. You know, Jehu up to this point seems pretty rough, and I'm sure he was a very tough man. And here's where he seems like he's going to be faithful to God. Jehu gathered all the peoples and said to him, "Ahab served Baal a little, Jehu serves him much. And now call to me all the prophets of Baal, his servants, his priests. Let not one be missing, for I have a great slaughtering to make to Baal, and anyone who is lacking shall not live." But Jehu did this deceptively in order to destroy the servants of Baal. And Jehu set apart an assembly for Baal, and they proclaimed it. And Jehu sent throughout all Israel, and all the servants of Baal came, so that there was not a man who did not come. And they came to the house of Baal, and the house of Baal was filled from one end to the other. And he said, "Who was over the wardrobe? Bring out garments for all the servants of Baal." And he brought out garments for them. And Jehu and Jehonadab, son of Rechab, went into the house of Baal and said to the servants of Baal, "Search and see that there are no servants of Jehovah here with you, but only the servants of Baal." You know, you don't want any of those pesky outsiders sneaking in. Make sure they're out of here. So they went to make slaughterings and ascending offerings or burnt offerings. Now Jehu had pointed himself 80 men outside and said, "The man who lets escape any of the men whom I have brought into your hands, his life for his life." And it came to be, when he had finished making the sending offering, Jehu said to the guard and the officers, "Go, strike them, let no one come out." And they struck them with the edge of the sword. And the guards and the officers threw them out and went into the inner chamber of the house of Baal and brought out the pillars of the house of Baal and burned them and broke down the statue of Baal and broke down the house of Baal and made it into a latrine to this day, which would make it unusable for religious purposes. Thus Jehu destroyed Baal out of all Israel. However, Jehu did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who made Israel sin with the golden calves that were at Bethel and Dan. And Jehovah said to Jehu, "Because you have done well in doing what is right in my eyes and have done to the house of Ahab all that was in my heart, your sons are going to sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation. But, there's always a but in the books of Kings, but Jehu did not walk in the law of Jehovah, Elohim of Israel, with all of his heart, for he did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, who had made Israel to sin. Now, we'll look to an example of a better one, and this is how we know that Christ is our high king and our high priest. If you turn with me to Hebrews chapter 2, and for these next couple verses I got, I used the a faithful version translation. Hebrews chapter 2, and we'll be looking at verses 9 through 3. Rather, 2:9 through 3:10. Hebrews 2, verse 9. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, crowned with glory and honor on account of suffering the death, in order that the grace of God himself, he himself might taste death for everyone, because it was fitting for him, for whom all things were created and by whom all things exists, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the author of their salvation perfect through sufferings. For both he who is sanctifying the house and those who are sanctified are all of one, for which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren, saying, I will declare your name to my brethren. In the midst of the church, I will sing praise to you. And again, I will be trusting in him. And again, behold, I and the children whom God has given me. Therefore, since the children are partakers of flesh and blood, in like manner he also took part in the same, in order that through death he might annul him who has power of death, and that is the devil, that he might deliver those who were subject to bondage all through their lives by fear of death. For surely he is not taken upon himself to help the angels, but he is taken upon himself to help the seed of Abraham. For this reason, it is obligatory for him be made like his brethren in everything, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in all things pertaining to God, in order to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For because he himself has suffered, having been tempted or tried in a like manner, he is able to help those who are being tempted. Because of this, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of the faith we profess, Jesus Christ, who was faithful to him who appointed him, even as Moses was in all of his house. For he has been counted worthy of greater glory than Moses, even as he who has built the house has so much more honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone. He who built all things is God. Now, on the one hand, Moses was faithful in all of his house as a ministering servant for testimony of those things which were going to be spoken afterwards. But on the other hand, Christ was faithful as a son over his own house, whose house we are, if we are truly holding fast the confidence and rejoicing of the hope firm to the end. For this reason, even as the Holy Spirit says, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the rebellion in the day of temptation in the wilderness, where your fathers tempted me and tried me, and saw my works 40 years. Because of this, I was indignant with that generation and said, they are always going astray in their hearts, and they have not known my ways. And now, speaking on his kingship, if you look to Revelation chapter 19, for my closing verse, Revelation chapter 19, beginning in verse 11, we find a prophecy that I think is soon in coming, well, I wouldn't put a day on it. And I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it is called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he does judge and make war. And his eyes were like a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. And he had a name written that no one knows except him. And he is clothed with a garment dipped in blood, and his name is the Word of God. And just as an aside, this garment was as if it were dipped in blood, because he first thing he does when he goes to tread the grapes of God's wrath is he goes and finally takes care of the house of Amalek and sees that they're cut off forever. And the root of the bitterness of Esau is purged. Continuing on. And the armies in heaven which were following him on white horses, brethren, if we're faithful, that's us. That's you upon that horse. And they were clothed in linen, white and pure. And out of his mouth goes a sharp sword, the sword of truth, that he, with it he might smite the nations. And he shall shepherd them with an iron rod. And he treads the winepress of the fury and wrath of the Almighty God. And on his garment, on his thigh, he has written a name on it, King of Kings, Lord of Lords.